Welcome to Entrepreneur Eats, a conversation about business and community with a side of eats. My name is Deanna Smith, and I'm your host. Have you noticed that Grand Avenue is being renovated? When it's done, traffic will be much easier, and the heart of our business community will be much more beautiful. While it may be more challenging to shop and dine there right now, it would be grand to have you make an extra effort to support the businesses downtown. Hi, I'm Deanna Smith, and we're here at the Escondido Chamber of Commerce, and we're talking about our community and the impact of Measure I and which way that might may or may not go. And I am here with Chief of the Fire Department, Mr. John Tanger. Take it away.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the invite and being able to talk about this very important topic.
It's critical to our community, that's for sure.
It is.
Yeah. So how did the city budget shortfalls affect the fire department operations?
Yeah, so that's a great question. At this point, we've been able to, what I'd like to say is survive. We haven't been able to get to a point to where we're thriving as a fire department. There's a lot of things that we're unable to do. And one of the things that we look at when we talk about how we're doing and how we're reaching out to the community and is we look at our response times. And one of the things that we've seen over the last several years is we've had a erosion in our response times to where it's becoming concerning in that our goal, our mission is to get a fire engine to a fire and a paramedic on seat of a medical aid within 7.5 minutes, 90% of the time. And back in 2016, we were reaching that mark at 91% of the time. That was great. But over the years, that time has eroded to where at this point today, we're at like 85%. So that means we're getting there 85% of the time within those time frames. And that's our standard. That's our benchmark. And as the fire chief, I'm concerned about that. And not being able to add in additional resources to meet those needs. It's all based on budget and budgetary constraints. And that's where we're at right now. Just not being able to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
We're surviving.
Yes. Surviving is a very scary space for our community and really for even the firefighters, I'm sure, that must add added stress to your already stressful job.
Yeah. We're the fourth largest fire department here in the region in San Diego, second here next to Oceanside. And we are a very busy department. You know, we're going to be pushing close to 19,000 calls this year for 7 fire stations. And we only have 5 ambulances to put that in context. Our neighbors in San Marcos, they have half the population and they have 6 ambulances. So you can see where the disparity is. And, you know, the longer it takes for us to get resources on scene, the longer it takes in medical cases to get the patients to the hospital.
So it's very scary for our community.
It is for the community. And like you said, for the first responders and, you know, this fire chief is concerned about it as well.
Sure. Has it been difficult to recruit and retain firefighters and first responders in recent years? And tell me why.
Yeah. So during the midst of COVID, we found it extremely difficult. Basically what happened at that time is, the community colleges where we do a lot of our recruitment, they were shutting down. They just couldn't open up the schools. So we found there was a great dip in the volume of certified paramedics and emergency medical technicians and firefighter candidates. And so what we did is we kind of thought outside the box, and what we brought in was an emergency medical technician program. So that's like the lowest level, entry level, if you will, into our fire department. And the goal was to train those folks and get them to a point to where they are able to get experience with us, a very busy progressive department, and then get them into paramedic programs and into fire academies, and then hope that in return, they would come and work for us and build a career and a life with us. And we're starting to see that to come to fruition. And it's pretty exciting to see that program work.
So you would say that was a very good use, a good investment on your resources that you had at hand.
It has been. This program is working very well for us, and we're thankful, and it's been fun to see.
And if we had a little bit more funding, do you see that you could even you could put more efforts towards that?
Yeah. So I think, you know, when we look at adding additional resources, if that was an option in the future, having more potential and more opportunity for others to grow within the organization is going to be needed. You know, so bolstering this program and enhancing it is going to be, would be essential to making this more successful.
Oh, that's great news, and probably a great resource for our younger population, kids who don't necessarily want to go to college. That could be a great plan for them.
Yeah. So one of the things that we've really worked hard on is our Fire Explorer program and reaching out to the schools to get folks involved in the Explorer program. And then that, using that as a stepping stone to, you know, get some experience and see if this is something that they're interested in. Perhaps it is and perhaps it isn't, but it gives them an opportunity to see what the fire service is all about. And then if they want to pursue their career, you know, fostering them and helping mentor them and grow them so that they can go on and mature into this profession. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's one of the things that we look at. But again, you know, when we talk about reaching out to the schools, that's another program that has suffered. You know, when I started back here in 1999, our Adopt-a-School program was a huge success. And just with bandwidth and call volume and not having all the resources, we don't have the capacity. And everyone talks about capacity and workload and all that. But just with everything that we have going on, trying to get out and reach the schools is a challenge for us, you know, and that's something that we want to enhance and bolster back and get going as well.
Mm-hmm. So our budget challenges not only affect what is happening now, but generations in the future.
Correct. Yeah. Absolutely.
And nobody really thinks about that.
Yeah.
That's something that we really need to pay attention to.
Yeah. And one of the things that, you know, when I first became fire chief over a year ago, we wanted to do was get a standards of cover study. It has been a long time since we did that. And that is where a consultant comes in and looks at your fire department and really turns it upside down and takes a really close look at the services that you're providing. Where are you meeting the mark with the community? And where do you have some challenges? And where do you need to do some things right away because it's urgent. That study's almost done. And I think that blueprint is really going to set us up for success if there is funding, which I hope there is, to be able to, again, not survive like we are and we have been, but to thrive.
Yes. So if the Measure I doesn't pass, how will that affect closing stations around our town?
Yeah, so that's a difficult question because I don't have a perfect answer for it. If I were to be asked by my boss, the city manager, you know, to come up with a significant reduction in our budget, the only way that we could possibly do that would be to lay people off and either close down a fire station or brown fire stations out. We're at the very bare minimum right now with 36 personnel on duty. For a city this size, that's the bare minimum that we can do. And so for us to go less than that or go down, you know, to two person engine companies, one, it's unsafe. It doesn't meet the NFPA standards. So it would be devastating, you know?
Yeah. And how would you choose which station to shut down? Would it be my neighborhood? Would it be your neighborhood? What would it be your son's neighborhood? How do you choose?
Yeah, so there is no good answer. And what you would have to do is basically look at statistics, look at call volume, look at severity of calls in the area. But at the end of the day, whatever area geographically is affected, if we had to do this, you know, if someone is having a heart attack and they need an ambulance and paramedics on scene right away, or their child's not breathing, it does not matter, because at the end of the day, we are suffering as a community, and there is no right answer. You know, there is no crystal ball that says you should do it here and everything's going to be okay. And then when you do something like that and you close down or have to brown out a fire station, you're also going to increase the amount of call volume you're putting on the neighboring stations around it, right? So we talk about call volume and how that's increased, and we're not currently meeting our standard. So that standard is going to continue to rise. But then we're also going to impact our neighbors, right? So our neighbors to the west, east, and south, we're going to need their assistance more often. So that is going to impact their own communities. And we have to look at that too.
Mm-hmm. Just like a domino effect.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. What are the current needs the fire department doesn't have, and how far in a deficit are you as far as having up-to-date technology and working engines that are could be the best that they could be?
Yeah, so speaking of fire engines and technology, we recently made a very, very important move, probably the biggest change we've made in my career over the last 26 years, was we moved from Escondido Police Department as our dispatch center, and we moved over to Northcom, which is a regionalized dispatch center here in San Diego County. We were the only ones that were not part of the North Zone JPA, and now we are. And so that has helped us immensely in efficiencies, especially when you're talking about other folks coming in or us providing help to others. It's streamlined the process, and we're all speaking the same language, and it's comforting to know that our neighbors are here for us and we're here for them, and hopefully in a timely manner. So that has been a great win for this fire department, and I'm super thankful for that. But again, when we talk about budget issues and fire apparatus or ambulances, you know, those continue to be a challenge. And in the example that I can use is back in 2019, again, we were facing some financial difficulties, some struggles as a city, and the decision was made to go ahead and hold off on purchasing 3 fire engines, not knowing that the following year COVID would hit. And so we just ordered, back in 2021, we ordered 3 fire engines that should have been here within a year, year and a half. We just took delivery of those 3 fire engines last month.
Wow.
So back to my point, we've used a lot of duct tape. We've have a great amount of respect for our fleet services that keep these older pieces of equipment on the road. They've done an amazing job to keep us out there on the streets protecting the community. But again, these again, domino effects, if you will, about the struggles that we have financially make it a challenge.
Yes, I can understand that completely. So many things have changed since 2020, and it sounds like you're doing the best you can do, which is pretty remarkable with what you have. So does the fire department have a fire prevention program?
Yeah, we do. And that's another program, a city of our size. We have six and a half employees in there. And they're responsible for not just only mandated fire inspections from the state that we get, but they also have to review all plans that are coming in from the community, businesses, new residential, you know, all things that need to be redone, you know, when it comes to sprinkler systems or new fire code. And that department is also a skeleton department. You know, they are barely getting by, and there's so much more that we should be doing out in the community. We should be involved again with the schools. We should, you know, have home hardening projects, but we just don't have the bandwidth. Defensible space program. It's trying to get all those needs met for the community and just not having the bandwidth to do it and being able to get a sustainable revenue source, we hope will hopefully get us to where we need to be to protect the community better.
Yes. We have talked about so many important things that directly impact our lives and the safety of our lives. Is there a quick message that you want to share with the voters about Measure I?
Well, I think it's important that the community knows that the city of Escondido, the Escondido Fire Department, you know, public safety, we're here for the community. You know, that's our job, and we're going to continue to do our very best to provide the highest level of service. When we talk about closing down fire stations or browning fire stations out, or we talk about having to reduce, you know, the amount of ambulances or apparatus in our community, that, like you said, Deanna, is life-changing, and it's scary. And I'm scared as the fire chief, and I'm hopeful that we will be able to rally together and be able to tackle this challenge, because I know rather than, again, surviving, we can thrive as a community.
Yes, I totally agree. What does thriving look like to you?
Thriving looks like a department that is not constantly battling just to try and make ends meet, if you will. We're being proactive rather than reactive. And right now we're reactive, and that's uncomfortable. And it has been for some time. We want to be proactive. We want to be out engaged and doing the right things for the community. And so that's what thriving means to me.
Good. I love it. Thank you, Chief. I really appreciate your time. It's really important to share this information with our community. And I know your time is very valuable. So I'll let you get back to saving our community.
Right on. Again, I thank you guys so much for having me. And we appreciate all the work you're doing with this.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thank you.
Yes on I, investing in Escondido's future. This year, Escondido residents have a question to answer. What kind of community do you want Escondido to be? Measure I is a bipartisan effort led by community members, not politicians. It will add a 1 penny sales tax on every dollar spent in Escondido. The measure would generate about $28 million every year. This money could fund critical priorities like addressing homelessness, improving local streets, sidewalks, and infrastructure, providing police, firefighters, dispatchers, and paramedics resources to protect public safety and keeping our city safe. The city of Escondido is facing a financial crisis. In spite of a decade of service cuts, city revenue has not been able to keep up the pace with growing costs. If we don't pass Measure I, the city will have no choice but to cut services like the library and the Center for the Arts, parks and recreations, senior services, and the Escondido Police and Fire Departments. Oversight and accountability is at the heart of Measure I. The measure will sunset after 20 years and includes a citizens oversight committee to ensure new revenue is spent appropriately. Essential goods like groceries and medication are exempt from this tax. Bring much needed funding to Escondido, 1 penny at a time. Vote yes on Measure I. For more information, visit escondidocitizens.org.